Chapter 16. A Royal Meeting. The sound heard through a distant fog lured Alexandra Stiles back to consciousness. Her head began throbbing almost immediately, and she winced at the dull ache pulsing steadily inside her skull. She did not know where she was for a few seconds, but the amnesia lasted briefly. The memories returned quickly once she raised her heavy head and discovered the surrounding darkness. Images of glistening teeth and not moving away fast enough flashed through her mind. The alien had struck her with some kind of stinger and brought about the sleep that resulted in waking up here.
Oh God, I'm inside the hive.
The discovery struck icy terror in her heart. Frantically, Alex scanned her surroundings, searching for salvation and finding nothing but an addendum to her horrific situation. She had not been in the hive that saw Ensign Christie torn apart, but there was no doubt this was it. Around her were the skeletons described so accurately by Ensign Angel. The dank, musty smell of decomposed bodies clung stridently to the air. She tried not to think of what she was inhaling and trembled. Inside the darkened host chamber, the air was also humid. Beads of sweat formed under her uniform and ran down her forehead from her hairline. The place was quiet with no sign or movement of the creatures that brought her here. She did, however, see the sealed egg in front of her. Alex froze, wanting to scream but too terrified to bring attention to herself from the creatures. They had not killed her, which meant she was this spore's host. It had been a long time since she was this afraid, not since she had been in the hands of the Cardassians. Back then, they had implanted their seed in her too, but this was far different. This was obscene. She looked at her hands, trying to see how they pinned her to this chamber of horrors, and discovered she was being held in place by the creature's secreted resin. It was strong enough to dangle her off the floor, trapped against the wall with the rest of the xenomorph's previous victims. Before each ruined and decomposed body was an unsealed egg, and nearby, the dead spore once its work was done. The egg in front of her remained sealed, but Alex knew this was a temporary state of affairs. She wanted to scream for help, but the scientist in her vetoed the idea immediately. Besides, if the captain were smart, he would take what's left of the away team and escape, not waste time trying to mount a rescue that might see them share a fate. However she extricated herself from this nightmare, she would have to do it alone. If killing herself became a choice, it was one Alex would readily accept than suffer the death of those who came before her. Until she faced that moment, however, she would try to find a way out. Alex was a scientist. She had to believe her mind could get her out of this, or her life's work would mean nothing. Think, Alex. Work the problem, as someone famous once said. These things have no sensory organs, yet they detect their prey quickly. Obviously, they're not drawn to light because this place was dark, like a tomb. What need did they have for it? They had no eyes or ears. Telepathic, perhaps. It was possible. They had an exceedingly organized social structure. So far, their hierarchy possessed quasi-entomological traits. Eggs, spores, and drones. Was there a warrior caste too? If there was a queen, there might be. Not important. Alex disregarded that line of reasoning. Right now, she needed to determine how the spores seemed to detect when a host was near. It stood to reason the eggs must hatch pretty quickly after coming into contact with a potential host because of the inconsistency of the supply. So they must hatch when they sense the host nearby, but how? Scent? Not from inside a sealed egg. Sound? Could it be sound? Is that why it was so quiet in here? She saw no auditory organs on the drones, but that meant nothing. Who knew ducks had ears? Alex tensed up and breathed quietly. Sound was not just a thing to be heard. It could be felt. Sound waves moved through the air in invisible tremors. It was all a matter of frequency. White sound could shatter eardrums. Low frequencies beyond human hearing could drive canines insane. If the alien spore sensed her presence by sound, then every breath, every flex of muscle, no matter how slight, could be a beacon to wake it up. So she had to be extremely quiet and pray it would be enough until she could figure out how to escape.
Are we ready?
Chris asked his away team from inside the confines of the runabout.
Let's get going,
Wynn said impatiently, a phase rifle in his grip. The Vulcan stood at the main hatch, waiting for Julia to land the ship. Their rescue from the dropship was fraught with danger, but their odds of rescuing Alex improved thanks to Julia and the runabout's phasers. While Chris did not doubt there were more than enough creatures to make the away team's rescue of Alex extremely dangerous, at least they had a fighting chance now. If his crew survived long enough to return to the Maverick, Chris would seriously have to consider where the Prime Directive stood in all this. How different things would have turned out, Chris thought, if the atmosphere of Fury wasn't ionized. Collins, Angel, and Christie would still be with them. And for what? Even though he learned the truth about Ripley and Hicks from Bishop, who lay disconnected in one of the runabout's compartments, Chris wasn't sure what he gained. Needless to say, Chris would hold himself accountable for much in the days to come. Right now, they had to get Alex before anyone else paid for his mistakes. It was bad enough to see Ezra's sorrow when Julia told him what happened to Lieutenant Ty Atwater. Chris was not about to lose his science officer to the same fate. As it was, Wynn was foaming at the mouth to go after Alex. The Vulcan displayed uncharacteristic savagery that would give the aliens in the Hive a run for their money. Was it just Wynn's fears for Alex that drove his aggressive behavior, or was it something more?
Have you got her, Ezra?
The security officer held the tricorder up, studying it while a phaser rifle was slung over his shoulder.
Yes, I detect her life signs clearly. She is alive, but there is no way to tell if...
He trailed off, not knowing how to finish that sentence.
If they haven't got one of those things inside of her...
Wynn didn't need to hear Ezra say it.
Well, if she's taken, we can put her in stasis until the Maverick returns, right?
He looked at Chris.
Absolutely.
Chris replied. If there was anyone who could be able to extract the parasite from inside Alex, it was Nathan Jackson.
We may be able to beam it out of her.
Julia added, able to see how fearful Wynn was for Alex.
Rest assured, Vin,
Ezra said firmly.
She will not die in this godforsaken place.
Chris let out a breath and turned to Julia.
All right, you know what to do, Julia?
Yes, sir.
The chief engineer nodded, though she did not like the idea much.
Once you're on the ground, I'll circle the Hive until I receive your signal to land.
Right. Under no circumstances will you be on the ground before that, Lieutenant. Are we clear?
Julia glanced at Ezra and saw the security chief shared his captain's insistence.
I do not want you in any more danger than you have already been, Julia.
All right.
Julia frowned.
Good.
Chris turned towards the hatch.
Take us down.
The rain was a light teeming that prickled against the skin. Seeing the runabout soar into the air, it consoled Chris to know it would not be far away when they needed it. As they headed towards the large Hive structure discovered by Ensign Angel and Christie during the last hour of their lives, the rescue party found the same entrance along the walls of the bizarre construction. No light radiated from the jagged smear of black leading into hell, nor were there any aliens in sight. Chris suspected the creatures were still searching for the prey they knew were here, if not gone. Wynn entered first, his phaser rifle leading the way in readiness to fire. His expression was something Chris had never seen. Any alien attempting to stop Wynn from reaching Alex would have reason to regret it.
Vin, wait up.
Chris ordered the Vulcan, who immediately stopped and glanced impatiently over his shoulder for his captain and the security chief to catch up.
Captain,
Ezra spoke up as he studied the tricorder, frowning.
I cannot get an accurate fix on the aliens. There may be some interference coming from the structure. I can pinpoint their general location, but nothing exact.
What about Alex?
Wynn turned around and faced Ezra at that alarming news.
Her life signs are easy to pinpoint, Lieutenant Tanner. Fortunately, one carbon-based life form amongst several silicon types stands out.
That's something at least,
Chris muttered.
Are we clear to go?
As we will ever be. There do not appear to be aliens in the immediate vicinity.
You don't sound very sure.
I am not,
Ezra admitted, not about to lie. As soon as they entered the darkness, the torches perched on the barrel of their rifles came to life. The beam's range allowed them to see several feet away, although they couldn't agree if this was a blessing or a curse. The bizarre construction of the alien Hive confronted the rescue party with the same horror faced by Angel and Christie. Gigantic veins ran across the high ceilings, and the Hive's interior seemed to be a collection of dark chambers, shadowy and indistinct. It was the perfect environment for the aliens to lie in wait. Chris wondered if the creature's homeworld resembled this and felt grateful at never having the misfortune to land in such a desolate place. Tiny droplets of rain became visible in the path of their torch beams, and the suffocating humidity attacked them mercilessly. After a few minutes, Wynn could tolerate it no more and discarded his Starfleet tissue blazer and turtleneck.
Ezra, how far away is she?
Chris asked as they moved through the shadowy chambers.
About 100 feet.
Almost at the center,
Wynn guessed.
Makes sense. They'd put her in the egg chamber, where the queen would be. The queen is usually isolated if they follow the pattern of Hive societies. The drones would protect her, but at a safe distance.
So we will have to pass their defensive perimeter to reach her.
Ezra scanned the surrounding area instinctively.
I think so.
The tricorder uttered a shrill sound, matching the appearance of moving blips across the display.
Alien signals approaching.
How far away?
Chris demanded.
I cannot determine that accurately, but we should proceed with extreme caution.
No sooner than the words left his lips, a black shape sprang out of nowhere, heading straight for Ezra. Chris saw its dark body fly overhead, about to land on his security chief. He raised his phaser to fire when Wynn's arm shot out and wrapped a fist around the creature's ankle. The Vulcan pulled back with so much force the alien swung around the way it came, slamming onto the hard ground, screeching its outrage. He rushed in as the alien shook its head to clear its disorientation. When it turned to face him, Wynn brought the butt of his rifle down against its jaw, shattering a mouthful of sharp teeth. As the xenomorph reeled, Wynn closed in and, with both hands, grabbed the elongated skull and twisted hard. The resulting snap was so loud even Chris and Ezra winced when the alien went limp, seeing its head turned almost all the way around on its neck. Wynn stood up and looked over his shoulder before stating icily,
"Let's go."
But they were not going anywhere yet. Two more aliens sprang out of the darkness. Chris ducked as one lunged and rolled across the grimy floor as he fired. The only thing he heard was a screech of pain and the brief illumination of the phaser as the creature exploded, spraying acid in all directions. Excruciating pain flared across his shoulder when some of it splashed on his uniform. A groan escaped him as the noxious substance ate through the fabric to reach the skin. Chris ripped the entire sleeve away, preventing the injury from worsening. He still suffered burns, but not enough to slow him down, just enough to give him something to think about. In the meantime, Ezra finished vaporizing the second creature when he noticed Wynn had gone ahead.
"Wynn!"
Ezra shouted as he hurried to the captain to help him up.
"Wait for us, Lieutenant!"
Wynn did not respond, and Ezra shook his head in annoyance as he turned to Chris.
"Are you all right?"
"Yeah, it hurts, but I'll live."
Chris stood up and examined the burnt flesh on his shoulder. It stung like hell, but adrenaline and fear did much to mitigate the pain for now. He was more focused on Wynn, who had disappeared.
"Wynn, hold your horses. Now."
"Well, hurry up."
Wynn snapped back from the next chamber. Chris shook his head in disbelief at the helmsman's impeccable timing in displaying temperamental behavior.
"Is it me, or is he behaving just a little
deranged?"
Ezra finished his thought because the chief was thinking the same thing himself.
"What he did to that alien made me feel pity for the creature. It's not just worrying for Alex, either. He has been this way for quite some time now."
"I know."
Chris recalled how Wynn tore them apart during their spat. A little more strength would have ended him and Ezra in the same condition as that alien lying on the floor with its head 180 degrees from where it ought to be. Unfortunately, they didn't have time to address their concerns with Wynn.
"We'll deal with this later, if there is a later."
More aliens converged on them the further into the hive they pushed. The tricorder showed the remaining aliens were now en route to their location, no doubt perceiving their intrusion as an attack on their queen. Alex was less than 20 feet away now, and her life signs were still strong. Wynn's ferocity continued to escalate, and the more Chris watched him, the more anxious the captain became. The latest kill, again with his bare hands, had Wynn shoving one of those elongated heads into the jagged point of a damaged steel chair leg used to construct the hive. Wynn impaled the creature through the base of its skull, forcing steel to exit through the top of its head, just beyond the jaw. According to Wynn, it was where its central cortex was located. Chris did not argue with the results since the alien did not survive the procedure. They entered the large chamber containing the skeletal remains of the humans and domestic animals used by the company in its breeding program. It was a macabre picture of death, and Chris could not even imagine the evil that allowed one human being to do this to another.
"These poor souls,"
Ezra whispered as he imagined the terror experienced by these victims, human and animal, in the last minutes of their lives. A hand reached through the darkness and caught his sleeve. Startled, Chris almost fired when he froze, staring into a human face. A familiar human face.
"Angel."
Chris died a little when her hollowed eyes stared at him.
"Captain."
Moisture covered Angel's exposed skin as she lay trapped against the wall, covered in resin the creatures used to construct their hive and keep their prey immobilized for implantation.
"Sweet Jesus."
Ezra muttered behind him, and Chris knew it wasn't because she was alive but because an unsealed egg and its dead spore lay at her feet. Now he understood why the tricorder hadn't picked up her life signs when scanning for Alex. She had an alien inside her.
"Captain, I can feel it moving."
Hot tears ran down her cheeks when she blinked.
It's scratching against my insides. I think it's going to come soon.
We'll get you out of here, Ensign.
Chris assured her feebly while he searched for the fastest way to do that.
Captain.
She tried not to cry, gripped with pity at his ignorance and her own wretched fate.
You can't get this out of me in time. Please don't let me die like this. Please don't let me see it coming. I couldn't stand it.
Hearing that plea almost broke Chris Larrabee into a thousand fragments. Not since Sarah and Adam's death had Chris felt such anguish and despair. This child stood here because of his choices. Even if he lived to the end of creation, he could never absolve himself of what he did to her and all the others. Collins, Christy and Atwater. Chris forced away his guilt. He could not think of that now, not when she needed him to be strong. They were out of time if Angel could feel the infant alien clawing its way out of her sternum. Even if he pulled her free, they had to make it out of here again, and it would be too late. No, Chris knew what she asked of him and decided his ensign was far braver than he.
Angel, do not talk that way.
Ezra spoke up for the first time, unable to accept the inevitable.
We will extricate you from this.
Ezra.
Chris spoke with a voice not entirely his own.
You and Vin, go get Alex.
What? Why?
Do as I say!
Chris's vehement roar would have sent the aliens running for cover if they understood the words. Wynn met Chris's gaze with a wave of sympathy, not just only for the young ensign but also for his captain.
Come on, Ezra, we have to go.
No, not like this.
Ezra protested, but the reality was crowding in fast.
Please, Chief.
Angel made her last plea.
I don't want to see it come out of me.
Ezra's heart broke inside his chest. He never hated anything as much as this miserable species they stumbled upon on Fury 361. Wynn pulled him away before Ezra could say anything further, deciding if he didn't, Ezra wouldn't leave. Chris did not watch as his security chief and helmsman faded into the darkness. All he could do was stare into the face of this child whose life turned into an obscenity because of his obsession. Taking a step towards her, Chris touched her cheek, wet with tears. She cried again, and each sob tore at his soul like knives.
I'm scared, Captain. I'm so scared.
It's okay, Ensign. I'm going to be right here.
Chris leaned forward, raising her chin in his hand, and lowered his lips to hers in a gentle kiss. It was the most lingering kiss he ever gave any woman he was not in love with. Chris poured into it all the tenderness and affection he could wring out of his heart for this girl. He kissed her even as he raised the barrel of the phaser rifle to her temple. Lost in the kiss, Angel clung to the last beautiful moment she would have before she died. She kissed him, oblivious to his tears, until he pulled the trigger. One shot was all it took. Angel went limp in his arms, her head slumping against his shoulder as the life drained out of her. He held her for as long as he could, and when Chris stepped away, he cried too. Of all the things he did to bring them to this place, he never realized how wrong he was until he stared at this child who begged him to take her life.
I'm so sorry, Ensign. God help me. I am so sorry.
They were coming. They were actually coming for her. Alex heard gunfire and voices in the distance like a miracle given form. Her eyes darted to the egg, praying the noise wouldn't wake the alien spore in front of her. Through all the shooting and voices, the spore remained sealed, confirming her theory its sensory perception had limits. However, now it was time for Alex to make a decision. Her friends were close, but they might not know exactly where she was. She had to help them find her, even if it risked waking the spore.
Finn!
Alex screamed at the top of her lungs and hoped it was enough.
Alex!
A response came almost immediately.
Alex! We're coming!
The egg needed no more incentive than that. It unsealed with a loud hiss of escaping warm gas, like an obscene parody of a flower bud blooming.
Come faster!
She was unashamed to express the pure unadulterated terror in her voice. One spindly digit made an exploratory examination of the outside world through the noisome fluid of its receptacle. She watched another digit appear, dragging clear, sticky fluid in thick, suspending rivulets. Soon the entire creature was pushing toward the edge of the egg. Alex had not seen the spore before, but it reminded her of a hand with too many fingers. She recognized the tail, the long coiling tail whose only purpose was to send it propelling through the air towards some helpless victims. She saw its muscles flex and knew it was preparing to jump. Alex screamed just as when fired. The spore exploded midair, its toxic blood splashing across the floor and over its own unsealed egg. An alien leaped through the fumes of acid to be greeted by the fire of Ezra's phaser. Another emerged, and when reacted with the speed that made him the best shot on the Maverick, ending the threat before it could even reach them. Its blood had yet to hiss into the ground when Wynn let go of his rifle to reach her. Behind him, Ezra covered his back as he closed the distance.
Alex.
A swell of relief and gratitude overcame him with such intensity when pushed his lips against hers in a hard, demanding kiss before he knew what he was doing. For a moment, Alex didn't know what surprised her more. Her rescue, or that Wynn had actually kissed her.
Are you all right?
1 second more, and I wouldn't have been.
She glanced at the ruined remains of the spore and the egg it hatched from.
I do not wish to interrupt your reunion, Lieutenant Tanner, but do you think you could remove our lovely science officer from her present incarceration so we can get the fuck out of here?
Can't argue with that.
She almost smiled until she noticed the absence of Chris Larrabee.
Where's the captain?
Right here.
Chris joined them.
You okay, Alex?
Yes, sir.
Alex nodded and then saw something in his eyes that made her keep her answer short. It wasn't just him. It was also in Wynn's and Ezra's eyes. What had happened that was worse than them coming into the hive to rescue her? The answer almost frightened her. Within a second, Wynn ripped away the resin trapping her in place, and once free, gravity dropped her into his arms from her suspended position against the wall. Alex embraced him, never more happy to be free. However, any delight was short-lived. The tricorder began beeping loudly.
Captain.
Ezra looked at Chris.
They're coming.
How many?
Chris asked as they retreated the way they came. There was a pause before the security officer answered.
All of them.
Chris thought quickly. There was only one way for them to leave this place alive. It was time for a royal meeting. It was easy to find the chamber where all the alien eggs originated. The alien advance stopped in its tracks as soon as they approached it. Chris suspected the creatures were holding position, uncertain of what to do. It was not the first time Chris invaded a hatchery and guessed the aliens would not risk attacking and endangering the mother of their colony. No one dared to speak as the away team entered the Maw of Hell. What they saw robbed everyone of speech. The surrounding floor was full of eggs produced by a biological conveyor belt running across the room's length. The ovipositor ran like a giant conduit surrounding them, beginning at an egg and ending with the queen alien perched on top of it. Knowing the queen existed was nothing like seeing her for themselves. In her report, Angel spoke of the queen being larger and far more formidable than any drones they had encountered, but that description paled compared to the reality. Aware she had visitors, the queen raised her massive head, flared with black frills that looked very much like a crown. Her outer lips, it was the closest definition Chris could come up with, pulled back and revealed an enormous mouth full of teeth the size of his forearms. Clear ooze dribbled off those massive, uneven teeth as fangs bared in their direction.
Captain, tell me again how this is a good idea?
Alex whispered, trying to hide how terrified she was staring at the enormous creature. Chris didn't answer but stepped forward, his eyes fixed on the alien. Wisely, he kept beyond her reach but close enough for the alien queen to know she was facing the leader of this small band of humans daring to invade her hatchery.
So you're the queen?
She hissed a loud stomach-turning sound. They regarded each other for a long moment, puzzling those who observed the exchange.
I'm going to kill you.
The menace in his voice made those who heard it shudder.
I'm going to wipe you and your whole fucking nest out of existence. If I have to turn this planet into radioactive mush, I will do that because you're going to pay for Ripley, for Hicks, and for Angel. You're gonna pay 1,000 fucking times for Angel.
An egg unsealed next to him like a gauntlet thrown. Chris paid little attention because he had come in here with a plan.
Now Julia.
The tremendous explosion from above rocked the structure. With the detente shattered, the queen bellowed loudly, her limbs flaying as the high ceiling above them crumbled, blown apart by a phaser blast. Everyone ran for cover as the runabout slammed through the roof of the hatchery, raining debris down on the queen's precious eggs. The queen roared with fury, struggling to break free of her egg sac, and Chris had no intention of sticking around for that. Once inside the hatchery, the runabout quickly set down. Julia picked her landing spot carefully on top of a pile of debris to avoid squashing the acid-filled eggs. It was hardly the safest landing site and somewhat unstable, but Chris knew as well as Julia the runabout would be capable of blasting off any surface.
Get to the ship.
Chris didn't have to repeat the order. Everyone bolted across the hatchery towards the small ship, which was as close to heaven as any vehicle could be. Alex was the first to reach the open hatch. The destruction of the hive had overridden the aliens' fear for their queen, and they were closing in. As Alex clambered through the open door, Julia aimed the runabout's phasers at an approaching alien and obliterated it. Ezra and Wynn trailed behind Alex, firing their weapons at the aliens converging on them like a swarm. Chris had one last thing to do before he left the hive. Setting his phaser for overload, he tossed it at the queen before running like hell for the runabout while his crew covered him. Enraged and ferocious screeching pierced his ears. The captain didn't have to look over his shoulder to see aliens running him down. When he reached the runabout, Chris practically jumped through the open hatch.
Get us out of here.
Wynn had raced to the cockpit the instant he came on board and was ready for that order. As Julia closed the hatch, the craft lifted off the ground. Looking down, Chris could see the aliens circling the ship. He did not doubt some would try to attach themselves to the craft before it flew out of reach. He couldn't care less. They could hang on for all they were worth, but they would not survive the trip out of the atmosphere because he'd burn the bastards off first. The runabout exploded off the ground as Wynn took off at maximum speed, sending waves of plasma from the engines as it shot into the air like a comet. The fallout incinerated the eggs and aliens beneath it, ending their threat in a screech of all-consuming heat. Flying the runabout through the fissure Julia created to reach them, he widened it on the way out and saw large chunks of the domed roof caving in. Another explosion, courtesy of Chris's phaser, rocked the structure seconds before the runabout reached the open sky. Chris looked out the window at the explosion with satisfaction.
Die, bitch. Die.
He gave himself a moment to catch his breath before he got to his feet and headed toward the cockpit.
Vin, come about.
Come about?
Wynn looked at Chris, puzzled.
Do it.
Chris was in no mood to explain himself.
Ezra, how many torpedoes have we got on this thing?
5.
Vin, I want you to make a pass over the hive and then fire all torpedoes at that damn place.
All?
Ezra said, shocked.
One would be sufficient.
All?
Chris repeated himself, his voice glacial.
I want the entire site leveled.
No one dared argue with him. Epilogue. The whole picture. The Maverick was only 2 days away from the Sulaco when it received the distress signal sent by Julia Pemberton before she left to find the away team on Fury. Buck Wilmington apologized to Admiral Donaldson, explaining that an emergency prevented them from reaching the Vorla system as scheduled. Life in Starfleet meant coping with the unexpected, and Donaldson accepted Buck's apology with assurances the USS Saratoga, also in the vicinity, could take the Maverick's place with no difficulty. The Maverick reversed course and sped up to Warp 9, reducing the 2-day journey to a matter of hours. The distress signal provided little detail regarding the emergency, but what Buck knew of Ellen Ripley's alien told him they could not waste any time reaching the away team. The runabout had already returned to the Sulaco when the Maverick arrived. Chris wasted no time having his crew beamed off the ancient ship to more familiar surroundings. After what they had been through, he would not force them to remain on the Sulaco for a minute longer than necessary. Everything they endured was his fault, and he knew it. It would be a long time before the price of forgetting his responsibilities as captain of the Maverick left his mind. All he needed to do was remember the girl who asked to be killed, and suddenly, the obsession driving him these past few weeks did not seem as important as his crew or his duty to them. The Maverick made another sweep of the Sulaco after calibrating the sensors with the data accumulated from Alex's tricorder to detect non-carbon-based life forms. The sensors gave the Sulaco a clean bill of health, but Chris had no intention of leaving anyone on board. After the last few days, the away team had spent enough time on the ship and was happy to go. At Chris's order, the Maverick signaled Deep Space 5 to dispatch a tug to tow the vessel back to Earth. To ensure no one else stumbled unwittingly across Fiorina 361, Chris ordered the deployment of a warning beacon, cautioning any ships passing by to avoid the surface at all costs. He did not know if the xenomorphs survived the torpedo barrage, but he wanted the creatures to capture no more hosts for their queen. Chris remained on the Sulaco long enough to gather the belongings of Corporal Hicks for himself. Hicks was family, and Chris did not feel right about leaving the man's possessions on the ship that brought him to his death. He did the same for Ripley, mostly because he couldn't bear to forget her. Ellen Ripley's story would stay with him for the rest of his life. Thanks to Ripley, Chris learned to value the friends in his life because Ripley lost everyone she cared for through no fault of her own. He, who was a great deal luckier, took his own for granted. Since receiving Q's gift, he had been doing nothing else but that. What Angel taught him was a more painful lesson, one Chris would carry for a long time. She and all the others, Lieutenant Ty Atwater, Lieutenant Susan Collins, and Ensign John Christie, died because he forgot a captain's responsibility was to his ship first. Everything else came second. When the away team returned to the Maverick, they all had injuries that needed tending. Despite treatment with a dermal generator, Julia, and when sustained severe lacerations that required further consultation with trained medical personnel, Nathan Jackson ordered them all to sickbay before they even stepped off the transporter pad. Alex and Ezra retired to their quarters once Nathan was satisfied they were well enough to do so. Although Chris suffered third-degree burns on the shoulder, he ignored Nathan's demand to get treatment because Chris had no patience with a doctor's poking and prodding when only one thing was on his mind. When Chris reached Mary's door, he didn't know what to say to her. His behavior the past few weeks had been offensive. If Mary left the Maverick permanently, he would have no one to blame but himself. Before all this happened, he had been willing to let her go, believing she was less important than his quest for justice. As Chris waited for her to open the door, Sarah would be utterly furious by his behavior if she were alive to witness it. Chris didn't know what he would say to her, but the pain inside of him was so intense only her forgiveness would take some of it away. Mary gaped at him in shock when the door slid open. Grime, soot from the smoke, and gooey alien resin covered him, discarding his Starfleet blazer and turtleneck after being sprayed with acid. A plethora of bruises and acid burns covered his exposed skin, the worst of which was the burn on his shoulder. None of this mattered to Chris because seeing her before him, smelling the faint allure of her perfume, made him terribly grateful to be alive.
Oh my God, Chris, what happened to you?
Can I come in, Mary?
Mary nodded and stepped aside. She had been on her way to the bridge to find out what emergency occurred on Fury 361 to require the Maverick to come off mission. Mary expected whatever the trouble was, she would most likely find Chris at sickbay. Why wasn't he there already?
Chris, you're hurt.
She ran her finger gently on the tender flesh seared with acid.
It's okay. I'll see Nathan later. I've got something to tell you. Something important.
She could see it in his eyes. What terrible thing happened to him down there? Something so unspeakable he could barely keep it contained behind that icy-colored stare. Mary brushed aside the discord between them to the back of her mind because he needed her, and he was not a man who would ask. They could deal with their tattered relationship later because he needed compassion, not indifference. Instead, she wrapped her arms around him and held him. There was the hesitation of shame for a brief second before it relented to the desire for comfort. Chris reacted, burying his head in the crook of her shoulder while he wrapped his arms around her waist.
I'm sorry.
He whispered as the bottled-up sorrow inside him finally found release. The tears came freely as Chris wept softly in her embrace and took comfort in the assurance she cooed into his ears that everything would be all right.
I love you.
Mary looked up, startled because he had never admitted it before. Surprise gave way to elation because she loved him too. Chris did not fear telling her the truth. He would say anything to keep her from going away if it was in his power to keep her with him. Ripley never had that chance. The xenomorph stole her life. Chris would not make the same mistake. He would not let anyone slip away because he was too arrogant or stubborn. He would not lose Mary for anything. After a few moments, Chris composed himself and took a step back.
I love you, Mary. From the moment I met you, I was in love with you. There's no excuse for how I've been these past few weeks, but I want to make it right between us. I want you to stay on the Maverick. You belong here with me. I need you.
Oh, Chris.
Mary responded tearily. She couldn't think of anything else to say because too many emotions overwhelmed her. Chris caught a wet drop in his fingertip, hating he had caused it.
I don't want you to leave, Mary. You're the best thing that's happened to me since Sarah and Adam. I don't want to lose you. I was a complete asshole for acting the way I did, not knowing what I had or being dumb enough to think I could do without it. You and Billy mean everything to me. I can't do without either of you. You're part of my life.
I guess we are.
She managed a bittersweet smile, wondering what resulted in this watershed realization. While elated by his admission, Mary also recognized something traumatic had taken place on Fury to allow him to speak from the heart.
Chris, what happened down there?
Chris didn't know if he wanted to tell her the unvarnished truth, particularly with Ensign Michelle Angel. Perhaps Chris would do so another day, but for now, he would tell Mary what he could. Taking Mary's hand in his, he raised his eyes to hers and spoke earnestly.
I learned my choices can hurt people, and I must think of them and let go of my obsessions. The truth about my family will always haunt me, but I promise you I won't shut you or any of my friends out.
Mary accepted those terms, understanding this was not a man who broke his promises. She brushed her hand over his stubbled cheek.
And I promise, we'll be there for you no matter what happens.
I know, I should have always known that.
We all grow a little, Chris, even Starship captains.
Especially Starship captains.
Chris agreed, but this was one lesson he could have done without.
You feeling all right, Vin?
Nathan Jackson regarded the Vulcan sitting impatiently on the bio bed as one of his nurses put the finishing touches on the wound he had just treated. The doctor studied the readings on his medical scanner, although he didn't need the sophisticated diagnostic device to determine something was wrong with the helmsman. Wynn fidgeted on the bed, unable to bear the inactivity of staying put. Although he showed no signs of illness, Nathan's scans showed Wynn's metabolic rate increased beyond the limits of what was customary for a Vulcan. Not to mention the fact the young man was paying close attention to his nurse. Wynn seemed to lean towards her, basking in her presence. The scanner revealed the Vulcan version of endorphin surging through Wynn at unprecedented levels. What on earth happened to him on Fury 361? By Nathan's estimation, Wynn's date with Vulcan maturity was 2 years away, but the readings on his scanner now revealed otherwise. Wynn tore his attention away from Lieutenant Saunders. He could smell her in his nostrils, not just her scent, but something beneath the skin that reached into him on a primal level. Female. That was the closest definition he could come to identifying it. Wynn wondered if Alex smelled the same way and suddenly wished to find her.
Yeah, I'm okay. Why?
You seem a little out of sorts. Your metabolism is up. Anything else happened to you down there you want to talk about?
Should he tell Nathan how aware he was becoming of the opposite sex? Wynn balked at the idea of doing it in front of Saunders. The Maverick may have been a galaxy-class starship, but news traveled quickly, faster if it was salacious gossip. Wynn had no intention of letting anyone know about his private business. Still, Nathan was no fool. If the doctor thought Wynn was lying, Wynn would be stuck in sick bay until kingdom come. If he wanted to avoid this, he better come up with an explanation.
There is one thing. It's not much, but it may have something to do with my feelings. I got into a tangle with a xenomorph when we were down there. We were in close contact, and I picked up things telepathically.
What sort of things?
Nathan's brow furrowed, making Wynn regret saying anything at all.
Too late now, Tanner. Finish the story.
Emotions. Instincts. I got pretty deep into its head. They're not intelligent like we are. One thing and one thing alone defines their existence. The need to breed. Nothing else matters.
How deep inside did you get?
Nathan hid just how worried he was about the Vulcan. Confirming his suspicions would be problematic. Vulcans did not discuss a matter like this without good reason, and, as a Vulcan would put it, he lacked appropriate facts to prove his theory.
Not much,
Wynn shrugged, and Nathan knew instantly he was lying.
Just enough to know we were in a lot of trouble.
Nathan did not answer, but he was thinking the same thing. They were in a lot of trouble, and though it had yet to manifest, Nathan knew it soon would. Except he still needed to learn how to treat the problem if his suspicions proved correct. The doctor suspected the meld did more than give Wynn an insight into the alien's psyche. If he was right, they had better batten down the hatches and wait for the storm to come. Either way, it was going to be a bumpy ride. To his surprise, the android Bishop woke to find himself in the middle of what appeared to be a Scottish glen. In the distance lay the splendor of the Highland Mountains, with gloriously rolling glades of lustrous green. He did not know what surprised him more, waking up here or discovering he was very much intact. He appeared to be in the same condition he had been when he came off the production line some 400 years ago. There was no sign of the catastrophic damage inflicted by the alien queen on the Sulaco. He marveled at the beauty around him and took a deep breath of the fragrant air when suddenly he realized he wasn't alone.
Alex.
He greeted with a faint smile.
Where am I?
Alexandra Stiles beamed, genuinely pleased to see Bishop so taken by his restored form and the surroundings. Julia and Alex had worked tirelessly since returning to the Maverick to bring Bishop back to life. Neither possessed the expertise to restore his android body. That feat would take months and require Bishop's assistance. Still, Alex hated the idea of leaving him in limbo until then. By downloading his core memory into the holographic projection system, they could at least give him back his body in this environment of light and magnetic containment.
You are on board the Maverick,
Alex explained.
This is a starship.
Bishop stared at her incredulously, quickly surveying the surrounding space to process how this was possible.
It doesn't look it.
Oh, I like him.
Hello.
Bishop greeted Julia politely.
Bishop, this is Chief Engineer Julia Pemberton. She's the one who helped me configure your core memory into a holographic matrix.
This is a hologram?
The android exclaimed, astonished, though it was never easy to tell with Bishop and his understated manner.
Yes, but unlike anything you might understand of the concept,
Julia added,
you're at the moment a hard light hologram. In this place, you are essentially a whole person. We'll still need your help constructing your original body to download your matrix. I have contacted the Daystrom Institute. Their robotic experts are eager to meet you.
I see.
Bishop nodded, absorbing everything with the usual quiet.
How long do I remain online?
He hated the fact they might turn him on and off at will.
You can remain online for as long as you like.
Alex smiled.
We've given you autonomous control of your program, not to mention access to the ship's computer. You can interface with it and update your memory banks.
I like this place.
Bishop looked up at the picturesque world around him.
You can program as many scenery or places as you like. If it's on the main computer, you can go there. I know it can't compare to seeing the real thing, but it will keep you busy while we figure out how to restore that body of yours to what it was.
Julia could see why Alex had grown so fond of the android.
I don't know what to say.
Bishop was genuinely touched by the effort these humans had gone to for him.
Say nothing.
Alex answered.
Just enjoy it. This is your new home, Bishop.
Bishop looked around the glen and lowered himself onto the lush grass. His fingers raked the artificially generated blades and caressed the pile gently. It surprised him how real the texture of leaves felt under his palm. He had never been to Earth. His activation took place shortly before he first shipped to the Sulaco. Thus he never saw the world that designed and created him. For the first time, he understood what drew human beings home, even in the middle of deep space.
Not bad.
He whispered as the artificial sun peeked past the thick clouds and warmed his face.
Not bad for an android.
Chris stared out the window of his ready room at the jeweled orb of the Vorlis homeworld. Although arriving a day later than expected, the Maverick made good time once it picked up its wayward captain and resumed its mission. During the journey, Chris spent much of the time making himself accessible to his crew once again. For the first time in weeks, he walked the length of his ship, dropped in for inspections, and let those who noted his absence see he was back from the dark corner he had himself in for months. He communed with the vessel the way he had not done since he first came on board and assumed command. It felt good. Aside from making amends to Mary, he had to make several apologies for his behavior over the past weeks. He neglected Billy and delighted the boy by taking him fishing. For half the day, it was just the two of them, and Chris reminded himself he loved Billy as much as the boy's mother. The attention thrilled Billy and reminded Chris that although he had lost Sarah and Adam, his new family meant just as much to him. He also called in on Josiah, who was happy to share a bottle of Saurian brandy with him. It made Chris's apology easier and proved why the man was one hell of a psychiatrist. As always, Buck was easy to please. Seeing his captain and oldest friend back on track was all the thanks he needed, although Chris felt compelled to make the gesture. During his obsession, Buck held the Maverick and the senior staff together. It was no simple feat to do while wrestling daily with his obtuse captain. Buck took the effort, as he always did, with a shrug and smile. Sometimes, Chris wondered how he would ever manage if Buck wasn't there to pick him up or tell him what he needed to hear, even if he was an ass. After a moment, Chris turned away from the window and returned to his desk, paying attention to the data pads of backed-up work he either ignored or left Casey to deal with during the last month. Chris picked up his cup of brisk hot coffee and took a deep sip, determined to get on top of this daunting heap of paperwork by the end of the day. He neglected his duties as captain for far too long. It was time for him to show why he deserved to be master of this vessel. Lord knew he had done little lately to deserve this command. The other pile of data pads on the far end of the desk tried desperately to catch his attention, but Chris ignored them. His obsession with finding out the truth about his family's murder, to the point of neglecting everything else, was over. He would pursue it when he was done with the day's work. Justice had waited 5 years already. A few more hours wouldn't hurt. However, just because he put his quest into perspective did not mean Chris was done with his search to learn who murdered his family. When he discovered the guilty party, there would be no stone in any corner of the galaxy under which they could hide from him. Chris would hunt them down and kill them. That much he remained adamant about. The soft chime at his door prompted Chris to look up from the staff evaluations Buck had prepared for him.
Come in.
The door slid open with a hiss, and Ezra Standish stepped into the room. The captain had seen little of the chief security officer since their arrival at Vorlis. Ezra was busy with the Vorlis delegates, who were touring the Maverick to make a thorough assessment of the defensive, as well as the social impact, of obtaining Federation membership. As always, the commander dealt with the politicians himself, unprepared to leave such an important task to his juniors.
Ezra.
Chris leaned back in his chair and set his cup down.
What can I do for you? The Vorli delegation giving us trouble?
Ezra paused in front of the captain's desk.
At the moment, they are more fascinated with our holographic android than anything else.
Really?
Chris asked with surprise, aware Julia and Alex had made the restoration of Bishop their pet project.
How so?
Well, Mr. Bishop has been studying the hologram database extensively and has introduced our visitors to Scotland, New Zealand, and Alaska in one afternoon. I have a dozen officials who want to know if a Kodiak bear really exists or if it is some holographic fantasy.
Ezra remarked with apparent amusement in his voice.
Our android is quite the ambassador of Earth.
I like that. The Daystrom people want his entire matrix sent to Earth.
Julia and Alex will not be happy.
Ezra pointed out, and Chris agreed.
I told them they can see him when we put into Earth or come here themselves. Bishop is still getting used to a new century, and he's grown accustomed to Julia and Alex. He might find it difficult to adjust to unfamiliar faces.
How did they take that?
The security chief assumed the engineers at the prestigious Daystrom Institute for Robotics would scoff at the idea of catering to an android's mental health, despite their experiences with Commander Data of the Enterprise.
Surprisingly well. The guy I spoke to, Commander Maddox, admitted there was no reason Bishop couldn't remain with us for a while.
Ezra was delaying the real reason for his arrival here and, when the conversation lapsed into silence, realized the captain had made the same observation himself. Clearing his throat, he shifted his gaze to the pile of data pads intentionally ignored at the corner of the captain's desk. Hopefully, he would avoid a permanent sentence to the brig for his next suggestion. However, after the events on Fury 361, Ezra believed the captain owed him a fair hearing on his proposal.
You're not working on finding your answer?
Ezra glanced at the data pads.
I have duties to this ship first.
Chris said stiffly, tensing despite himself.
I'll deal with that later.
Would you mind if I peruse your data?
Chris stared at Ezra.
Why?
Forgive me, Captain.
Ezra discarded the speech he carefully rehearsed in his quarters because a flash of insight told him this entreaty would come best from the heart.
Chris.
Ezra began again.
Of the two of us, I am more qualified than you to discover if there is a conspiracy regarding your family's demise. I deal with deception every day in security. You selected me as your chief security officer because you know I can detect trouble better than anyone in the fleet. While I do not choose to overstate my capabilities, if there is something to find in those data pads, I will locate it. Your love for your family makes you too close to the issue. From my experience, I have learned that when one is too close to a thing, one may not see the entire picture.
Chris's anger rose as if Ezra had intruded upon his private domain until he remembered Ellen Ripley again. That reminder gave him the pause needed to consider Ezra's words. Ripley faced everything alone. She probably died the same way. It was too late for Ripley, but it wasn't for him, and Ezra was that good. If something in those datapads led to a solution, Ezra could find it. The man could be absolutely relentless when there was a truth to be uncovered. Finding himself at a crossroads, Chris drew in his breath and accepted the help Ripley never had.
All right, take your best shot.
He gestured at Ezra to take them from sight before he changed his mind.
Thank you, Chris.
Ezra gathered the collection from the captain's desk.
I know how hard that decision was to make. I promise you I will not stop until I have an answer.
Thank you, Ezra.
Chris answered, genuinely touched by the offer. Once the datapads disappeared from his desk, Chris faced the window again.
You know something, Ezra, when I was standing face to face with that alien queen, she looked at me like she had already won. Like she and her kind, always would. It didn't matter that I was going to kill her because death doesn't have the same meaning for them. Ultimately, all we are is fodder for her children. In the end, we'll die so that they can live.
I shudder at the prospect. I can only reiterate my gratitude the lady and her deadly progeny are no more.
Returning to the Maverick did not change Ezra's hatred for the entire species and what it did to his security team.
No, she isn't.
Chris swung around in his chair to look Ezra straight in the eye.
She isn't gone, and this is far from over. The aliens down there on Fiorina are gone. That's all that is certain.
I do not see how there could be any more.
Ezra wondered where Chris was going with this.
The nuclear explosion on LV-427 would have also destroyed the derelict.
Ezra.
Chris looked at him with pity. This time, it was Ezra who could not see the entire picture. Chris supposed the chief was right after all.
being too close to a thing did blind a person.
The derelict ship carrying the original alien eggs crashed on LV-427. It didn't come from there. Somewhere out there,
he gestured towards the window.
Somewhere out there is an entire planet of these things. We'll land on it someday, and she'll find us all over again.
And the stars, which always looked so pure and beautiful to Commander Ezra Standish, suddenly became as black as the alien's empty soul.
The end. Thank you for listening.